Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Is the news getting you down? From accusations of corruption and collusion to economic fears, it can be hard to turn away from the events of the day. But as our smartphones reach out to make sure we are up to date, it's worth noting that technology might be doing more harm to our mental health than good. Avera's Wallace Jackman thinks the topic of media-induced anxiety and depression is worthy of a national conversation. Dr. Jackman has been chosen to present at the National Association of Social Workers National Convention in Washington, D.C. this week, and he joins us now with a preview of that. Thanks for stopping by, Dr. Jackman. Nice to see you.
Thank you. Good morning.
How long has this been a topic of interest for you as a social worker?
The media-induced piece has been something that's been of interest for the last 3 years, but anxiety and depression is something I've worked with for about the past 20 to 25 years.
And have you been to this national conference before? Is this...
No, I've never been to the national conference. I've spoken at the South Dakota State Conference for the last 3 or 4 years.
How's the selection process go for you to be chosen to be on this national forum?
Well, there's thousands of social workers from around the nation that will be attending this conference, so it's quite an honor to be able to be chosen to speak. Because they've spoken of hundreds and hundreds of applications that they've received nationwide. So I was really just shocked that I was allowed the opportunity to be able to speak. And it's a timely topic.
Right. And I think everyone, you know, inherently sort of feels like, oh, yes, that affects me. Are you talking about, low-level anxiety and depression, clinical addiction? Is there a spectrum here that you're interested in?
I think so. I mean, when I first started researching this topic, I started off too broad by just indicating the concept of media, because media denotes many different categories or areas of our life. It could be the news media, it could be social media. Primarily, the newer research has revolved around social media, such as Twitter, Facebook, Reddit. Pinterest, those types of sites, because that's where folks spend a majority of their time.
So that's your focus now? Is that sort of media?
For the most part,
yes. I was thinking media as in like the news media. That's where my brain went.
It certainly can be included. Yeah. I mean, there's a wealth of research even since the 1930s regarding the news, television, radio, and how that can have a traumatic impact on children and adolescents. Mm-hmm. So that's a fairly well-known factor. That the news media, especially events such as war, I mean, from the 30s and 40s, and thinking about World War I and II, that we know that those types of news information sites that folks will access, even since, like I said, the 30s or 40s, will lead to some levels of depression and more so anxiety and trauma symptoms for not just children and adolescents, but for adults.
All right. So the Twitter, Facebook, Reddit, Pinterest factor, Instagram, is that just based on what do we have the data?
Oh, yes. Yeah, there's data to support that there's a correlation and a link between anxiety and depression and accessing certain social media sites. There's 1.7 billion users of Facebook right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that is extensive. And it's the site that folks access the most. And the reason why the focus is more towards smartphone use and these applications more so than just the television media is people have more access to information through their smartphones than the folks in the 30s and 40s. You had to sit in front of a radio or TV to access that information,
sure,
which you didn't have access to when you were working or when you're in your car.
Yeah,
and
right.
So now you're able to access this information pretty much anywhere if you have a smartphone.
Right. And does it matter what kind of information you're looking at? Is there a different kind of impact if you're, you know, looking at your friend's vacation versus if what you're using Facebook for, which many people are, to look at politics and, environmental coverage? So many people are looking for news content from their social media sites now, and maybe people are just checking in on the grandkids.
Yeah, there's positive aspects of using social networking sites, too. I mean, I'm in the process of attempting to try to build a deck, and so I'm looking at Pinterest to figure out how to set those posts. And so there can be some positive aspects of, you know, looking at the vacation photos or what grandma's doing in Virginia and whatnot. But a majority of the research points towards the negative consequences. Folks spend, on average, 58 minutes a day on Facebook. You think of the productivity factor of how much time that's being taken away from other things that they could be doing in their life. And that's the average. So obviously there are some individuals that are spending more than an hour a day, and that's just on Facebook. We're not referring to any other sites that they might be accessing. So to answer your question regarding that spectrum, yes, there is a variation on the amount of anxiety and depression one might incur based upon what sites that they're accessing, what information they're accessing, and the amount of time that they're spending on the internet or on social media.
Yeah. When I think about Twitter, when I first set up Twitter on my smartphone, I set up notifications to come through because for work I sort of wanted to see, you know, the news as it was happening. And I was astonished at how fast Twitter moves. So there's a pace issue with Facebook, but particularly with Twitter, it changes so quickly.
Yes, there was a news columnist, I believe he's from the New York Times. I'm going to quote him in my presentation, that spoke of Twitter being news media on steroids, is what he referred to it as. And it really is. I mean, you're just inundated with information constantly. You'd almost have to stop the app or only have two or three connections to decrease the amount of data that you're receiving from people.
Right. All right. So what will you bring to the national conference? The latest data, the latest information, how are you putting it all together? Because there's so much.
Yeah, I had to narrow it down to the social media pieces, the Facebook, the Reddits, the Pinterest, those pieces, and Facebook being of primary importance because that's the one most people access. Approximately 75% of teenagers use Facebook, and most adults that have access to smartphones are accessing Facebook. So that's where a majority of my focus has been, and that's where some of the more abundant research is regarding anxiety, depression associated with social networking sites.
How bad is it?
It's bad. I mean, just go to Applebee's or go to a McDonald's and sit down and see how many, do your own research, and you'll see how many people are using their smartphones and addicted to them. Yeah. I mean, there are people that are having conversations, or trying to have conversations, and the other person is on their smartphone. There's one term called phubbing, phubbing.
Okay.
It refers to the use of your phone and snubbing. And so the person is snubbing you even in the context of supposedly having a conversation with you. So it's pretty bad. I mean, if you think, too, about the accidents that folks are having with distracted driving and texting, I'm certain the police department has some data with regards to the number of accidents increasing based upon people's problematic cell phone use.
How do you know that it's, you know, that it's problematic, and how do you know when it's addiction? And, you know, how do you know when, like, you know, it's causing me some kind of, you know, some stress, but yet an actual problem. How do you know when you have a problem?
That's a good question. Yeah. So as a psychologist, as a clinical social worker, that's a somewhat of a broad question. How do I know anything is a problem,
right,
or an addiction? And so you generally look at two or three factors. One, does it interfere with a person's thinking and their sleep and their behavioral patterns? Is it creeping into those areas? Secondly, is it interfering with their occupational work? Is it interfering with their work and their interpersonal relationships? Does it carry over into those areas of their life? If so, then it could be creeping into the addiction field.
Yeah. Productivity. You mentioned how many people can access this at work or even have to use it for work. So there's a certain amount of requirement that you're going to use social media at work, but yet you're supposed to be able to manage, you know, the work time and the personal time. Are there numbers or do you have concerns about just really what's happening in business and in productivity for people that...
That would be a good area to research. I mean, anecdotally speaking, with whether it be my clinic manager or I teach through the University of South Dakota School of Medicine and University of South Dakota Psychiatry Program. Just anecdotally, I see it interfere with the students' ability to be productive in the classroom, and then speaking with other managers of, like I said, my clinic manager, hiring and having people that are supposed to be doing their work, but instead they're accessing social media sites. So it's a consistent issue. It's a consistent problem, I think, problematic in many areas of our lives, even the Sioux Falls school system. I'm not certain what their policy is right now, yet I know with my own children who attended school there that they, for the most part, said, no, you're not supposed to have phones, but they almost had to give up because they're consistently having cell phone parents having to come back in to pick up the kid's cell phone after school, and it just became too much of a problem, so they just had to let it go.
And I think that's a really good point, this notion of we almost have to give up because parents, employers, teachers, in some ways, what if we did just give up and let it happen? There's real problems to that.
Yeah, I'd read a study that spoke of that giving up piece. And I think in Great Britain, they don't allow cell phones in schools. I don't know how they got around to doing it, but they don't because they had seen an increase in folks' anxiety and bullying, bullying incidents that are occurring over cell phone use. No, I believe parents have to set some sorts of limits, if nothing else. Having dinner time with no cell phone use. That's a rule that I have, is if we're going to go out to eat or we're going to have dinner, there will be no cell phone use or you're not going.
Yeah.
There was a research article in which 87% of teenagers sleep with their cell phones.
Wow.
That's incredible. You know, so that means only 13% of parents are keeping their children from not using, having their cell phone there. And most sleep with the cell phones under their pillow or in their hands. And I know just from speaking with clients outpatient that the parents will say, well, they use the cell phone as their alarm clock.
Yeah.
And that's a cop out. I mean, we've had alarm clocks for what, 60, 70 years.
But don't you think the people who have designed the phone knew that?
Yes.
They're like, we're going to put an alarm in here and we're going to put, the most useful, snoozable, put your own music in this alarm
right.
on here because we want people to have this. I mean, who else has designed a product that has become that ubiquitous in our lives?
Yes.
To where you will sleep with it. What else do you sleep with other than your pillow?
Right.
But you're right. People sleep with their technology or sleep with it very close by, but often it's right in the bed with them, under their pillow or in
their
hand.
That's incredibly high, 87%. Yeah. I mean, I would venture to guess some people don't sleep with their spouses 87% of the time. So it's just incredible. And so we know there's a link between less sleep or the quality of sleep and depression. It's one of the first questions psychiatrists and psychologists will ask on the inpatient unit is, what's your sleep pattern like? Yeah. And we know that that has an impact on folks' mood.
Right. Talk a little bit about what can be done.
Well, one, as a parent, if I'm speaking to any parents out there, being a parent of four myself, I know that it's difficult to set a good example for our children. But I think that's one, is we can't... We can't be texting and driving or accessing our smartphones when we're supposed to be having conversations, not just with our children, but I think with our adults or our peers or our colleagues. So I think first, setting an example. Secondly, I think being more aware. That's one of the things I'm going to present at the conference, because there's very little information about what do you do. So you're asking a great question. We have the research knowing, okay, it's a problem, anxiety, depression, trauma, sleep disturbance. We know it because of bullying, cyberbullying. We know that. Okay, what the heck do we do about it?
Right.
There's very little research about that piece. And so that's some of what I'm going to speak on. And so one of the things to answer your question is that of mindfulness. So just being more mindful. I mean, now that I've told you that 87% of folks sleep with their cell phones under their pillow, okay, be mindful. Are you doing that? How often do you do that? Is there something else differently that you can do? And I said 58% of our people use 58 minutes a day on Facebook. Can you cut that down to 45 minutes? So just being more mindful of the times that it's interfering in one's lives.
Right. And I know it was raining last night outside of my house, and I wanted to sit outside in the rain, intentionally left my phone inside, and had one of those moments where I got a little twitchy and thought, what if there's an emergency? What if, so part of this is driven by our fear of missing out, the FOMO.
Yes, yeah.
Another fun modern acronym.
Correct.
Is that I'm afraid that I'm going to be, and anytime, and I'm sure you understand as a parent too, if you're a parent or you have any kind of family members, loved ones, if you're away from them, this is now the easiest, but it didn't used to be like that. You used to go to the, you know, you'd leave the phone number of the restaurant with the babysitter.
Right.
Now you take the phone with you at your, you know, on date night and keep checking on the kids, whereas before you could sort of unplug. So that, pay attention to that feeling of sort of that anxious, I mean.
Correct.
You know.
That term FOMO, fear of missing out, there's research that supports that drives anxiety. That that makes the anxiety increase because of that fear. It's a fear based on the uncertainty, the unknown of what if. And when you talk about a generalized anxiety disorder, that's one of the key components to an anxiety disorder, is it's based on fear. It's based upon the unknown, not knowing what I'm going to do if this bad thing may or may not happen.
Yeah.
And so the cell phone use, the, being able to stay connected with others, that FOMO, that really can drive anxiety for folks.
Right. And the fact that you're going to be largely alone. If you're sitting at the dinner table and nobody else has a phone, or you don't have a phone and everyone else does, or you got, you know, you're going to be different. You're going to kind of stand out. And especially for kids, that's that can be, depending on the child, a hard thing.
Right.
Yeah. Well, you got a lot of work ahead of you.
Yeah.
Is this, now that you're kind of studying this and taking it to a national stage, is this something you're going to really stick, you know, be a focus for you professionally for a while, that you think?
Most certainly.
Yeah.
I definitely have a couple papers that I'll be hopefully getting published from this research that I've conducted. So yes, I can see this would be a niche for me.
All right. Come back and keep that conversation going. We appreciate your time.
Well, thank you.